So with that, we get to the Mass readings today, which point to the sacrament of matrimony and the holiness of the relationship as created by God between man and woman. This homily, by the way, is kind of PG-13, so you may have to carefully explain it to the younger children, as this is geared toward teenagers and adults. So notwithstanding the other vocations of priesthood, consecrated religious life, and holy single life, we're going to speak specifically about the nature of marriage as God intended this morning. In the ancient pagan world's belief system, the false gods and goddesses of virtually every known pagan civilization enjoyed and engaged in all kinds of sexual activity. In the pagan world, human activity was usually reflected in the mythology of the gods and goddesses, thus giving human beings license to do whatever they want, because, after all, our gods and goddesses do the very same thing. This included things like incest, adultery, fornication, bestiality, and homosexuality. In the pagan temples of Babylon, of Egypt, Greece, and Rome, it was not unusual to find things like sacred prostitution or various sexual rituals taking place, such as orgies, in honor of the gods and goddesses as a way of seeking the gods' favor through sensual pleasures. In those cultures, there was little differentiation that was made between natural heterosexuality and unnatural homosexuality. In fact, it was taught and encouraged in some pagan cultures like Greece that while a woman might be good for bearing children and for keeping the home or for use in temple copulation, she was still nothing else but a defective man. For men, the ideal was an intellectual, emotional, spiritual, and physical relationship with another man. Divorce, spousal abuse, degradation of women, murder, including induced abortion and infanticide, were the norm in pagan society. As always, the lack of divine truth leads to a darkening of the mind. The lack of divine truth leads to a darkening of the mind and a darkening of the spirit. This darkening of the mind and spirit then leads to dark and evil actions. If you read the first chapter of St. Paul's letter to the Romans, you will see St. Paul describing exactly that. Against all this stood the great lawgiver, Moses. God himself, through Moses, gave us a new standard for human sexual life. Number one, Moses writes the story of Adam and Eve in the book of Genesis. Secondly, in the Ten Commandments, Moses writes specifically that you shall not commit adultery and you shall not covet your neighbor's wife. There were in the pagan world a few people and a few thinkers who were following what St. Paul calls the natural law written in their hearts, who knew better than their contemporaries. They also knew deep down in their hearts the goods of monogamous marriage, of married life and family life. But in the pagan world, when you're forced with either sober virtue or intoxicating pleasure, well, guess what people are going to choose? They go for the intoxicating pleasure over sober virtue. The God of Israel, though, offered his people something different, something new, something dignified. A dignity to man and to woman that assured their personal good and would help them to help one another, but also to help them as a nation as they grew and prospered, to grow stronger and to prosper. For the Israelites, woman was no longer to be seen merely as a commodity or an instrument. She is a helpmate to the man who, like him, is made in God's image and likeness. So for us to understand the origin of man and God, let's take a look at God for a moment. God reveals himself as one. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. God is perfect unity. It would be revealed through Christ that God is a trinity of persons, three persons made one by complete mutual self-giving love, the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. Notice how after God, well, when God makes man, he says, "Let us make man in our image." He's speaking in the plural. He's not talking about angels or animals. He's referring to himself as a Trinity. And thus he creates Adam. But when we look at God and know that God is love, we know that from all eternity, God the Father loves his Word, the Son, the Word that would become flesh that we know of as Jesus Christ the Messiah. Prior to his incarnation, he is a spirit, the Word that emanates from the Father, of the same substance, God from God, light from light, true God from true God. The Father loves the Son and the Son the Father. That love generates the Holy Spirit, so God himself is a community of persons made one in complete mutual self-giving love. That is the image in which Adam, the first man, was made. As Genesis told us, God looked at the man and said it was not good for him to be alone. Adam, trying to have a rapport with the rest of creation, couldn't establish a relationship because, unlike himself, animals could not love unconditionally. They could not think rationally, and they could not choose freely. But Adam could, reflecting his divine nature. And so God, in his wisdom, says he's going to put man into a deep sleep and from his own bone create a woman. Now the name Adam comes from the Hebrew Adama, which means from the earth. But woman comes from the man. She is of the same substance. She is dust just as he is, but she is different from him. If you look at a man and a woman, you will see a physical difference, but we also know a mental and emotional difference as well, even a spiritual difference. But that word different should actually be complementary. They bring a sense of unity and completion to one another. As Adam says of the woman, just as God says of the Son, she is bone of my bone compared with God from God. She is flesh of my flesh compared with light from light. She is human from human compared with true God from true God. But the two are made equal in the sight of God, but for different purposes, to love one another, and in that love to bring forth unity, and in that unity to bring forth life. When I ask people, what is the first commandment that God gave human beings in the Garden of Eden? I usually get the negative response. Don't eat the fruit, or don't lie, or don't kill, or don't do this, or don't do that. But actually, the very first commandment is, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. That is God's first and original commandment. In your love for another, be united. In heart, mind, soul, and body, and in that union, bring forth life. Communion does that. Union with God is life-giving. Union with one another is life-giving as it's meant to be. It produces something good. Love always brings forth life. Sin, on the other hand, brings forth death and has nothing to do with love. When sin entered into marriage, then we see all kinds of horrible things happening, and marriage takes a beating throughout the entire Old Testament. Even though Moses tried to make it something good, human beings basically ruined it, to the point where the scribes and Pharisees had to ask Jesus that question. And Jesus brought marriage back to God's original plan and said, in the beginning God made them male and female, and a man shall leave his father and mother, the woman likewise, cling to their spouse, the two become one, and what God joins together cannot be separated by man. The bodies of man and woman, male and female, as well as their minds and their souls, are made for complementarity, made for union. The complementarity, the union between a man and woman in a covenanted marriage, is a privileged image of God. When a husband and wife bring forth new life, the family becomes an image of the Trinity himself. Never forget that. This was designed to increase the best of all forms of happiness among human beings, to grow in virtue, to become more honest, to have integrity. There's mutual caring between the spouses and the parents and their children until death do us part. It humanizes and it develops human progress. There's a great energy in families. Understand, sometimes husbands and wives argue and fight about things or bicker. Children, brothers and sisters bicker among each other. Teenagers bicker against their parents and vice versa. But never forget that where you find friction, you find heat. Where you find heat, you find fire. Where there's fire, there's energy. And all of that can be transformed into love. Love is not just a mere sentiment. But love is a willing commitment to the good of the other. Where the husband says to the wife, I live for your good, and the wife of the husband says the same thing, and parents to the children, to be what God has called us to be. In true love, in realistic love, there is self-sacrifice, not self-indulgence. In that self-sacrifice, we're helping each other to shed the illusions of the false self about each other and to love in each other the better self that each would like the other one to become. Kind of like coins in a pocket that are tarnished and put together, with that fire and that heat, there's purification, and those coins then become very shiny. Each spouse brings to the marriage and to the family the specific gifts that God has given to each particular sex that draws them to each other. For men, they have the gift of leadership, which is complemented by a woman's gift of teaching. God has given men the gift of guidance, which he complements with the woman's gift of nurturing. God gives to men the gift of wanting to protect, and that complements the woman's gift of generation, being able to bring forth new life. Man providing, woman creating and making beautiful. You see this beautiful blend of a man's mind and heart, of a woman's mind and heart with a man's logic and reason, the woman's feeling and emotion, along with the man's strength. All this brought together in a beautiful unity. For the ancient pagan world, the dark mind, the dark will, you find sexual expression and sexual activity alone as the highest goal of life. People are used just for selfish pleasure. It's the same in our modern pagan hedonist culture. When physical pleasures are considered to be the highest aim of life, and when faith is not, hope is not, nor true love, when we decide to forego things like study and work and prayer, when we decide to give aside self-giving and civic virtue, when there are no truly good things, what are we left with? We have self-indulgent narcissism. We have economic and cultural development that finds itself going backward, not forward. Keep in mind, as has been proven time and again by civilization after civilization, when material prosperity and moral decadence come together, that spells the end of any civilization, including our own. Material prosperity and moral decadence together are a toxic mix. As Christians, you and I are seeking to make the world a better place. If God has given us material prosperity, he wants moral prosperity as well, for us to grow in virtue and in faith, not less, but more, to see that we're here building the city of God, a civilization of truth and of justice. We're here to make this world better, more civil, more human, more just. We must be true to the divine image that God created us in, that divine image that is within. We seek to build a culture and a civilization of life and love, always combining our faith and our hope and our love together with the arts and the sciences and knowledge and wisdom, all this based on faith for the glory of God and the good of one another. So my brothers and sisters, as we begin this month of October dedicated to the sanctity of human life, we would do well to remember the words of St. Teresa of Calcutta. She said that the greatest destroyer of peace is abortion. Why? Procured abortion is the logical backup of failed contraception, that is, birth control. Contraception leads to a separation of human sexuality from the creation of life and the unity of the spouses. It leads to the mindset of sex for the sake of sex, an end in and of itself, leading to widespread adultery, fornication, homosexual activity, again, the unholy rituals at the altar of the false gods. Except this time, we become the false gods ourselves. Human sexuality, which is secularized, that is, taken away from its holiest purpose, will kill. Man, woman, love, family, life, prosperity, this is all of God. In the image of God, who is unity, in the image of God, who is love, be faithful. Be faithful to your spouses. Be faithful to God. Be fruitful. Fill the earth with harmony and peace, as can only come from the heart of God, our Creator.